It's time for Windows Weekly. Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott are here. We're going to talk. I'm going to rebuild while we're doing the show. I'm going to rebuild the Surface Studio. We've done some brain surgery. Well, Father Robert did some to make it a lot faster. We'll explain that. And it turns out Paul and Mary Jo were sitting on a huge story last week. Well, the NDA is over. They can tell us all. Stay tuned. It's a big story coming up on Windows Weekly next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly, episode 496, recorded Wednesday, December 14th, 2016. The arms have it. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code Windows to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we talk about Windows and Mac and Microsoft and Xbox and anything stuff. Anything that has to do with that little company in Redmond. Paul Thurrott is here from the fabulous thurrogood.com. Thurrott.com. And from allaboutmicrosoft.com, Mary Jo Foley is here. Both of them back east where it is now blizzarding. Has the polar vortex arrived?
Not yet here.
On the way.
On its way.
Yeah.
Well, good. Enjoy the balmy weather while you can.
The balmy 39 degrees that we get before it gets really cold. Yeah. Thank you.
And, wow, yesterday Bill Gates visits the president-elect. And today all the big shots are there, including Sachin Nadella.
Frank Shaw.
Yeah. And Frank Shaw went too?
we just saw a picture of him.
Well, that's
everyone has to bow and kiss the ring, Leo.
Well, yeah. Frank Shaw is the marketing guy, right?
Yeah, the head of PR.
He's the head of communications, yeah.
Why would he go? Did Tim Cook bring Phil Schiller? Yeah.
I bet they all bring their top communications/PR.
No, it's not Phil Schiller. It's what used to be Katie Cotton, whoever that
was. Oh, that's right, the Katie Cotton.
Yeah.
Frank is our Katie.
Elon Musk is there. We weren't sure if Musk or Bezos would go. Bezos is there.
Software Cats was there from Oracle.
As opposed to the walking cat from Twitter.
Right, which would have made
not that guy.
A lot more sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Okay. Walking cat speaks Trump's language. Twitter.
That is the language of the kids. Yep. Wow. Well, what I'm very interested in is what they'll look like coming out.
Right.
Yep.
Will they hang their heads sadly, or will they be cheerfully chattering? That's why I'm guaranteeing Frank Francis X. Shaw is there, to say, Mr. Nadella, before we go outside, may I offer some talking points?
Yep. Get your game face on.
Get your game face on, Sadie. Saddy. Is that what they call him? I just made that up, but I like it. Hey, Saddy, get your game face on there. Krzanich from Intel will be there.
Eric Schmidt
from
Larry Page.
Larry Page. Jeannie Rometty from IBM.
Yep.
Going to be the big shots. Somebody said if you just took a list of people, tech executives, with companies worth more than $1 billion and went up.
Yeah.
That's who was invited. But.
That makes sense.
Sure.
Yeah. Some not. Airbnb, is that maybe Airbnb is a unicorn. I guess it's a unicorn. But the CEO of Airbnb couldn't make it. He just washed his hair or something. Same thing with Travis Kalanick of Uber. So a few people couldn't go, but a lot, everybody else. Peter Thiel, of course, will be sitting on the president's side with Jared Kushner.
staring down the moguls. Sure. I think it's like a meeting of peers, though.
I was going to say it's a meeting of moguls as well.
Yeah, it's
it is.
A mogul meeting.
Yeah.
Before you get into your the meat of your comments, I would like to mention something. This Surface Studio in front of me is not the Surface Studio it was just a few days ago.
I heard it had minor inpatient surgery.
Well, remember I was a little sluggish. Now I got the base model, and you know the i5 is fine, 16 gigs of RAM is fine, but the hard drive was not super fast.
Right.
So Father Robert stepped up, Robert Ballester, the digital Jesuit, who is used to exorcisms, and said, and said, I could remove the hybrid drive that's in there. It's apparently a very slow, like a SATA 2 5400 RPM spinning disk plus a hybrid SSD to kind of help it along. He did benchmarks. He used a crystal disk mark. And look at these benchmarks. On the left, these are the drive benchmarks of the original drive. 133 read of 133 megabytes a second, write of 90 megabytes a second. It is awful. Awful, awful, awful. Sequential read 88.9 and 90. So he put in, and you know, I foot the bill, but he told me what to get. I got a Samsung Evo. He originally said get a 950. I cheaped out and got an 850. NVMe M.2 SSD. That's the boot drive. And then
I think that's what I have in my Nook.
Oh, shut up.
I'm serious.
Oh, your Nook. Your Nook book reader.
No, my Nook. No,
like,
not my
wow.
E-book reader.
We distinguish those by calling one a Nook and one a Nook.
Sorry.
It's a Nook, Nook. And it's a fast drive. You could get a faster drive, but at twice the price. And then a Kingston, not a very expensive 960 gig SSD for the second, because there is two drive connectors. It worked, which surprised me. And then the numbers, whoa, we're talking fourfold improvement.
It's a subtle change.
Four times faster. Sequential read and write of 541 megabyte read, 506 megabyte write. That's right up there with any, you know, fast SSD. You could probably get faster, but I think with a SATA 3 bus, that's probably about as fast you're going to get. So, wow. And I mean, wow. And it worked. And originally he was going to keep the image and all that. And I said, just blast it. So he blasted it and put, we got generic Windows 10 on there. And during the show, I'll be putting in all the stuff. So, Paul, I was asking before the show if there is apparently a Surface Restore disk you can download. But you're of the opinion that's not needed.
I've done it both ways. You know, I don't really notice a difference.
Yeah.
I don't have a Surface studio.
Well, the one thing I thought, maybe the dial's like the one hard, but the dial seems to work. So
you'll get the drivers you need. You know, it doesn't not give you.
Yeah. It recognizes the driver when I put it on the screen. So I can't think of anything else that's kind of you know, there's the OWL wallpaper, but all my files are not where I left them, but they will be soon.
Nope. It's a clean install.
I think that's a good way to do it. So anyway, I wanted to give you all a report because I know there was some interest in this.
That's amazing. I didn't think it was going to be that different.
Does it mean you've invalidated your warranty doing that or not?
Sure, I have.
Did what, Mary Jo? He didn't do anything. What do you mean?
No, it just, I came in one morning and it was really fast.
That happens.
No idea what you're talking about.
I mean, it is known that it has removable storage, right? So
it's the one, I think it's the one thing you can do. I mean, they don't encourage, I'm not saying they encourage
right,
it.
Right, they're not telling people to do it.
But it's the one thing that you can open it up and,
yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So, that's great. It worked. Yeah. Yay.
Yeah. I mean, we'll have to, have to give you some feedback, but in person. But so far so good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, that's all. Enough about me. What about you? Whoa! Do we pronounce it Whoa? Windows on ARM. Whoa!
A mere few hours after we spoke last week, Microsoft made what I would consider to be their biggest announcement of the year.
What? We speculated last week that they might be doing this, right?
I know. We knew, but we were under NDA.
Oh, you couldn't say.
Right.
Oh, you are cagey.
Yeah, we were under a tight one on that particular news.
If I was as giddy as a schoolgirl last week, Leo, it's because something wonderful was coming.
Why is this such a big deal, though, really? Tell me. If you think you know.
I mean, from my perspective, and you know me, I'm a wild-eyed dreamer type. I really do see this as a major reset for the PC industry. When Microsoft adopted ARM for Windows 8, I was so full of hope for that because I felt like this was Windows NT all over again. This was them having a chance to get this thing right again, you know? And of course, they came up with Windows RT, which was a piece of steaming garbage. But I always felt like that was kind of a missed opportunity. And so now they're doing ARM again. And there's two big differences. One is that ARM has progressed to the point where modern ARM processors are as powerful as Intel processors. But they don't come with any of the power management and battery life problems that Intel continues to struggle with. And Microsoft has figured out a way to emulate x86 on ARM, meaning that we can run Win32 desktop applications, Photoshop, iTunes, Chrome, whatever. Supposedly at full speed, right? And by the way, in games as well. I'm not saying that like the latest Call of Duty is going to run with 60 frames per second, you know, whatever. I don't think we have those advanced graphic capabilities yet. That's a different story. But, you know, for mainstream Windows users, this opens up a new world of portable computers. And I should say that's the other amazing thing about this announcement. It's for portable computers. It's not for phones, although, you know, that may change. They've talked about different screen sizes. I think Mary Jo has something about that. Mm-hmm. But the initial push for late next year, for a couple of devices probably, and then more like 2018, is going to be at redoing what we think of as the laptop, essentially, the laptop form in two-in-ones and, you know, mobile PCs. Full Windows 10, I don't know all the SKUs exactly. They wouldn't say exactly, but meaning there's also going to be an enterprise edition. So full domain support, all the stuff that Windows RT couldn't do.
Yep.
I think this is it. I think this is the thing I thought Windows RT was going to be, and it wasn't. And it's going to result in this kind of new class of PC that has cellular data built in. Microsoft's going to sell cellular data through the Windows Store from a variety of carriers in every country. So you'll be able to buy data and be able to switch seamlessly between cellular and Wi-Fi like people do today on phones. And so we're going to see devices that work, that look and work exactly like a PC, that run the same applications, that get killer battery life, have constant connectivity, and none of the downside of all the stuff that we've had over the years with Intel. Am I losing you, Mary Jo?
No, I agree. I think it's very interesting.
Like, yeah. Oh, I can't wait to share this one.
No, I have a lot of questions about how this is going to work in the real world.
Yeah.
I think it sounds amazing on paper, but it's like, okay, are you really going to be able to run Win32 apps at a decent speed in emulation on these things?
Right. So here's all I'll say to that, because we don't know, right? Neither one of us knows.
Know.
But what I can say is what we were told, which was that they were preparing this demo to go on stage. You know, they're looking at this, you know, ARM-based PC running Windows 10, and it's like, look, we want to show Photoshop. And the theory is, well, don't launch Photoshop. I mean, Photoshop takes forever to launch, even on a real PC.
Right.
And whoever had put this demo together said, no, we are launching Photoshop. We're going to do it in real time. I want people to see how fast that is. And actually, you can watch the demo for yourself. That doesn't equate to performance, right?
Right.
Obviously,
right.
Day-to-day performance, you know, whatever. We'll have to wait and see. But, you know, remember WOA, Windows on ARM, back in the day. Sorry, I'm so excited and verklempt here. sorry. I'm just crying just thinking about this. You know, back in the day, Windows on ARM, you know, the big demo was like, look, we can print. You know, it was like this Play School OS can print. And this time, here we are 4 years later, and it's like, we can run Photoshop full speed. And, oh, here's a game we're running full speed. You know, so it's a different world.
Yeah.
We'll see. You're right, though, to doubt. I mean, we'll see what the reality is.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. And the first devices we're expecting to see running this are probably holiday slash back to school 2017 period, right? The very first.
At the very earliest. In fact, I think what we're going to see next year is not going to be particularly impressive. I think the first.
Right, I agree.
It's going to be a small number of devices, nothing very serious. Yeah. And then I think CES 2018 is going to be the launch pad for the real big wave of devices.
Yeah, I bet you're right about that. You know, when I first heard about it before, well, it's weird how we heard about this, right? Like I had that tip about emulation on ARM that I ran the week before WinHack. And I just assumed that meant mobile because I'm like, okay, where does Windows 10 run on ARM right now? It runs on mobile, right? But that wasn't what it was. It was they built an emulation layer to work on the full Win32 desktop version. So
yes, it's
we
incredible.
We hadn't pieced that together, right?
The conversations we would have had, that we have had, because there have been rumors about this.
Yeah.
I've heard, you know, I don't mean me personally. People had heard that Microsoft had created an emulation thing that would let desktop apps run on ARM. And of course, the first thing you go to is Surface Phone, docked with Continuum. That's got to be what this is, right? Yep. It doesn't mean that, you know, phone form factors don't happen down the road. But you have to wonder now if this thing works, if it's successful. This is the opportunity for Microsoft to basically make a phone-sized device that is a real PC.
Yeah,
you know, there's no reason it can't have a simple UI in front of it that you dock it in is a real. It's always a real PC. Not because you would ever run iTunes while you're talking on the phone, but there's no reason a 6-inch screen can't have a phone calling capabilities in it. It's going to have integrated cellular.
Right. So that was the thing I asked Terry Myerson. So we get a little bit of time with him before this announcement, and the first thing I said is, "Okay, are you going to bring this to phones?" And he said, "You know, we're not drawing a sharp distinction between phones and desktop." Ooh, that's an exact quote.
That's very interesting.
Then I said, so what does that mean? And he said, you know, we're going to bring this new version to 6, 10, and 14-inch screens. Like he just had these numbers, right? It's like, oh, so they're saying
which,
it's
going to
be all categories.
Which, by the way, they didn't say on stage, did they?
No, they didn't say that on stage.
So that was an interesting admission.
Yeah. Because I was trying to press them for the Surface Phone thing, right? I'm like, okay, is this how you guys are going to do the Surface Phone thing? Like, that's where my mind's going, right? And he just said, you know, you guys have this strong thought in your heads that there's phones and desktops, but we don't think of it that way. We think screen sizes. So there's the 6-inch category, the 10, and the 14. And we're thinking about it being available across all of those.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think they're going to lose the distinction between what we call Windows Mobile and what we just call Windows today, you know, and I think that's fine.
I don't know what this means for Windows Mobile going forward, because Microsoft for now is continuing to update Windows Mobile and saying, this is the operating system for phones. When does that go away? Or if does that go away at some point?
So the two possibilities there are that it doesn't go away and that it does. So let me restate that. obviously. So
there's two options.
I know. Listen, I have so much to add to this conversation. sorry. What I mean is the possibilities here are they're doing it for themselves, right? In other words, that they could bring this capability to what we think of as a service phone. But I think it's I should say to their partners as well, because HP and other companies are making Windows phones and they're supporting that kind of thing. But I really think it's about this other thing. I think it's about changing what Microsoft's mobile strategy is and taking the thing that they've done that is successful and making it more available more broadly. But as far as Windows Mobile goes, I mean, I think the thing we need to remember about that is that it's the basis for other things that Microsoft does. You know, in other words, there isn't really a clean step up from IoT to mobile to, you know, whatever, HoloLens or Surface Hub to PC. It doesn't actually work like that. They're different branches off of some kind of, you know, combined code base. And Windows 10 Mobile is not a subset of Windows 10. It's got additional features that Windows 10 doesn't have today, like the phone dialer and so forth. And so there's no doubt that Windows 10 Mobile features are going to come into main Windows 10 because we're getting those cellular capabilities. I mean, they're going to have to add that stuff. Yeah. But and I realize we have cellular capabilities in Windows 10 today, but I mean cellular voice and messaging and things like that. So I mean, Surface Hub to me is based, I believe, is based on Windows 10 Mobile. So it's still kind of important from that perspective. We've got a big Surface Hub story for later. I think it continues, but no one would ever question, for example, does Windows IoT continue, right? I think we'd all agree. Right. Well, yeah, of course it does. But I mean, do they make a lot of money off that, or is it very broadly deployed out in the world? No, probably not. But I think these things all are valuable in a sense that they provide Microsoft with a lot of data about this system running on different form factors, different architectures, and so on.
Yeah. There's just so many angles to think about this, because it kind of did feel like we had thought about it happening back in the Windows RT day. Then we kind of said, oh, I guess it's not going to happen, right? And then Here it is. And the other question I had when we learned about it is, I'm like, okay, so wait, why would anybody do a UWP app now if you have this, if the emulation technology really works as advertised?
Yeah, just stop now.
Why would a company go and build a UWP app? Because you could say, hey, I could just build, you know, or take my Win32 app and just run that. And Microsoft continues to say that they believe there is a valid reason for doing this, both because UWP apps require relatively little modification to work across all the different variants of Windows 10. Right. Right. And because they're safer, right? If they're locked down in the store, they're safer for people to deploy than an app that is not a UWP app. So they're concentrating on, I think, on those two things and saying there's still a case to make for having UWP apps. But for the apps that people don't turn into a UWP app, especially things like line of business apps or fully featured things like Photoshop, that maybe there'll be a UWP version, but it won't be the same thing as full Photoshop. I think that's kind of the fallback thing.
So let me do what I usually do, which is provide a more positive outlook on what's happening.
Yeah, please, Eeyore.
No, I look at it the same way. I mean, UWP is awesome, but I also think it's fair to say it hasn't taken off in any meaningful way whatsoever. So what do you do? The problem is, this is the same approach that Microsoft has been pragmatically taking all along. If you go back to the idea of bridges, for example, the Centennial Bridge doesn't bring anyone into the UWP world, not really. It's a way to bring forward old, big applications that are never going to get ported to UWP and give them a UWP shell and give them a couple of UWP features like live tile support and notification support, and just, you know, kind of let them glide forward into the later half of their life or whatever, but really unchanged, right? It's not, there's no transition.
Is that true? I wondered about this. Like, because, you know, when you commit to the other kinds of bridges they have, I think they kind of say to you, okay, you can bring it in as a partially done UWP app, but you have to commit to making it a full UWP app at some point. Is that true with Centennial?
I'm not sure. I can't imagine. I mean, I don't understand how they would enforce such a thing. But as far as the Centennial Bridge goes specifically, no. Yeah. It's a Win32 app and a wrapper. So, in other words, like, not that we're going to, well, actually, we just did. I was going to say, not that we're going to see Photoshop. Actually, we just did see Photoshop. So Photoshop Elements is available through the store. It's a Win32 app. It is literally the same exact Win32 app. For the end user, the benefits are the things you just said: reliability, security, et cetera. Also, by the way, a license for 10 instances of that app, where Photoshop only gives you two. So, you're getting five times as much usage out of the same app for the same price. It's awesome. So that's awesome. But it's not a UWP app, not really. Adobe could, I don't think they have, but they could add a couple of UWP features, like I said, notification support, live tiles, and maybe some other things. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing, and this is Microsoft being pragmatic. Yes, it would be better for Microsoft and for their ecosystem if Adobe made a full UWP Photoshop version, right? That would be better for them. It's not going to happen, right? So pragmatically, you want to give developers a way forward, and pragmatically, you want to give users a solution that will work for them. So Win32, for whatever its problems, is very popular with people who use desktop computers. So now they're going to be able to use them on ARM. I mean, yes, would it be better if it was, you know, we just had UWP on ARM? Yeah. But isn't it actually better? Isn't it technically better to make all of your customers as happy as they can be and give them the things they expect? I mean, that was the problem with Windows RT. It looked like Windows 8. It looked like a duck, quacked like a duck, and then it was a turkey. you know.
Yeah, because that's a really good point, because I think when Windows RT came out, and also what else was I thinking along those lines? Something else. We kind of wondered who the target audience was, right, for that right. version of Windows, because they are making it very clear, I think, with this 132 emulation layer, that the target audience for these ARM-based mobile PCs are not like people who wanted netbooks, not those people, right? It's supposed to be a yeah. full computer, like a for professionals and for home users too. But I feel like they're kind of drawing a line in the sand with the 132 emulation and saying, this isn't just for like people at home who want to be casual, occasional users. This is for people who can make this their full laptop. Right.
I mean, I feel like you got to be pretty technical and be able to make some sacrifices to use that thing. It was crazy.
Yeah, I know. Right. So, yeah, I think it's interesting, and it'll be interesting to see if their premise that people still yeah. want a PC, even when they're mobile, and they don't want to necessarily only have a phone because of the limited screen size, lack of keyboard. I mean, you know, you could connect it up with Continuum, but if you're just, say, on a train with your phone and suddenly you want to, like, look at an Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And actually make modifications to it.
My mind literally reels at this topic, because you can kind of feel the pushback from people. They'll say, but I already have a phone that has cellular connectivity and I can tether my phone to my PC. And what's the big deal? The big deal is you're not using your phone's battery anymore. Right. And think about the difference in the conversation you can have with a customer, whether you're working at retail or you're, you know, a PC maker or whatever. Mm-hmm. Windows RT or Surface RT, right? You're like, okay, look, it's thin and it's light. And it looks like Windows 8, but hold on. There's all these caveats. You want to be really clear. They understand. Right. You're not installing iTunes. You're not installing Chrome. You're not getting any browser extensions. This stuff is not going to work. There's a really awful conversation you have. Now imagine the conversation you have with Windows 10 on ARM, right? You don't have to even tell them about ARM. Nobody cares about ARM. What you tell them is that this thing gets crazy battery life. This thing has integrated cellular connectivity. This thing runs all of the apps. It's Windows 10. You don't have to have any caveats. It just works. Now, we're assuming that the performance is going to work, right?
Right.
And so we'll see on that one. You're right. That's something we absolutely have to test real world, real life.
Yeah. You know, there's an interesting slice on this. It might do better than just work. I was talking with Joel Spolsky on triangulation on Monday. Mm-hmm. So he's a big programmer guy. He said, I thought by now we'd be running everything in VMs.
I think Mary Jo's building is about to collapse, by the way.
I know. I'll be right back. Hold on.
Sounds like Godzilla is outside the window.
She's just going to make sure her affairs are in order, and she'll be right back.
But Spolsky, who is a programmer, he created Trello and Stack Exchange, you know. So Stack Overflow. So this guy is pretty well connected. He said
he's sort of well known, Leo.
You've heard of Joel on Software. So he said, yeah. I was sure by now we'd be doing everything in VM because it's more secure. Just every app would run in its own virtual machine. And that is, if you're going to be doing emulation anyway on ARM, does the ARM, you know, one of the things about Intel, of course, it's got this kind of hypervisory thing built in, as does Windows, which makes emulation very efficient, virtualization very efficient. I wonder how efficient emulation could be on ARM.
This is the question. I was told that in use, if you were running Win32 apps on ARM, the effective battery life would be no better than it was running on x86. But the trick to these systems is how they run on idle.
Yeah.
It's how they run with the lid closed. And they don't really run, but I mean, you know, the battery lasts.
I'm like, saying not even just battery life, but there might be advantage to security because it might be...
Listen, I know that I'm not normally like this. I literally see this as a do-over for the PC industry. I don't mean that.
Well, like, and Apple, by the way, it's been rumored to be thinking about the same thing.
And probably for exactly the same reasons.
And, you know, this is death knell for Intel. I mean, this is what they've been worried about.
And you know what, though? Intel
Qualcomm's doing servers.
Screwed this up at every step of the way. Yeah. And you can go all the way back to 64-bit. They have never gotten this right. Intel ruined the initial tablet PC because those stupid Core M processors they had didn't have enough power. It didn't have enough battery life. They screwed up 64-bit with the Itanium, that piece of garbage that was the size of a Volkswagen. and then had to adopt AMD's X64 instruction set. Then their processors were not going to mobile. Fortunately, they had this little team over in Israel that made what we now still use, by the way, the Core processor family. They've been trying to adapt this thing down to small devices ever since, and they have never gotten it to right, to the tune that this year they canceled the Atom processors that were aimed at phones and small tablets. Intel has completely screwed themselves. And I think this is just Microsoft, and I think you're right about Apple, saying enough is enough. Time has gone by. ARM has improved. We have been waiting to make this move. We can't make it quickly enough. And it can only start with mobile devices. No one's going to, game PCs are not going to be there. Premium PCs are not going to be there. You're going to need Intel for the performance, desktop computers, et cetera. But I think
that's what I was going to say. They're keeping the market like this. Like ARM, Windows on ARM is the middle, the new middle of the market, right? Intel's the high end, and also the company that's helping them with virtual reality and virtual reality headsets.
So, well, we'll talk about that. I think that was Microsoft throwing Intel a bone because this was.
But also I think for now, they have to take a little bit of a wait and see with Windows on ARM too, because it's not like we keep saying it sounds good on paper, but let's see, right?
Absolutely. We should be very clear about that. But I'm speaking more from a vision standpoint. Intel and Microsoft, we could argue, have moved slowly to mobile. Microsoft now looks like a speed demon compared to Intel. And I think this is Microsoft making that break. Literally, I think the break on ARM versus Intel for the PC might literally be mobile versus desktop. Mm. I think that's how it's going to go. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, they're going to figure out graphics. They're going to figure out discrete graphics and dedicated GPUs. And we're going to move everything to ARM. I think this is the end. And I think
you do?
And I think the future of Intel is the same as the future of Microsoft. It's going to be cloud. And in their case, they're going to be. But you know what? ARM, they just made a 10 nanometer data center chip. So
They're doing servers.
I couldn't care less about Intel. If you can't save yourself 20 years later, I just don't know what to say. But I really think this is a major step away from Intel.
Oh. Yeah.
It definitely is a step away.
I think we can say with safety.
I do too. But I don't think we can yet say this is the end of Wintel. I think
Mary Jo, I have something I want to state for the record. This is the end of Wintel. No.
Okay.
The benefits you're talking a lot about battery life, but what on a wired desktop like this Surface Studio, would there be a reason to put it on ARM?
Well, no, but the irony of that device is that you're essentially running a mobile chipset. That's an ultrabook inside of a box. I mean, that device should be better, frankly. I mean, I agree. That thing should be better parts. But
don't make me sad. I spent a lot of money on this thing.
You know what we should say? By the way, like we just said, the very, very first devices of Windows running on ARM will be late 2017, probably 2018.
Oh, okay.
Right now... PCs are Intel-based. Windows PCs are Intel-based.
Yes. we're about to hit CES in 2-3 weeks.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of Intel announced at that show. There's no doubt about it. But this, this is kind of short term. And we'll see.
This is the post-PC era. This is talking about the post-PC era, basically.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, I didn't complete a thought earlier. Don't get me wrong. I don't believe that this signals some growth in the PC market. Like, we're not going to see PCs go back up to 400 million units a year or anything like that. I don't think that, but I think this makes PCs way more elegant devices that are more attuned to this mobile first, cloud first world that Microsoft always talks about. And I think it kind of helps forestall that inevitable decline, which, still kind of happens in the sense that, PCs can evolve into more tablet-like devices. Like the 2-in-1 form factor is one of the device types that's seen the most growth over the past couple of years. I think that becomes more the norm over time. And what's going to help that happen is that these things can be good tablets now because they're actually going to work untethered, where they kind of don't today.
Right. Somebody's
pointing
out. What's
worse than a hissing laptop? You pick up a tablet and it hisses.
I know, yeah.
Can you imagine an iPad hissing at you?
It is the case that there are ARM Windows devices right now, right? I mean, tablet devices.
There are any ARM-based small tablets?
It's not like a Yoga or something.
Basically, no. I mean, we see some out of China every once in a while, like a 7-inch something or whatever. But No, I mean, this sort of legitimizes, I don't know why I always say that. This sort of formalizes that market, you know, that Terry said to you, 6, 10, 14, I think.
Yep.
You know, those are mobile form factors. No one has a 14-inch desktop screen, right?
Right.
I mean, hopefully not in 2016. So this is a big push to make the PC more mobile friendly. Not 5 or 6 hours of battery life, like 12, 15 hours of battery life. The type of thing where you put it down, close the lid, come back 2 weeks later, and it's still at 100% battery life.
That'd be so awesome. Yeah. It would be awesome. I'm such a skeptic on that.
I sit out at the couch and watch TV. I had the iPhone. Somehow I left it on the table. So this morning I woke up and I went out there and it's sitting there and I picked it up and I looked at it and it said 96% battery life. That's what an iPhone does.
Yeah.
We need PCs that do that.
Yeah. So they're laptops, really, or tablets, not so much desktops.
Oh, sorry, I should say without going into hibernation.
Yeah, right. That thing was sitting there ready
to do anything.
Modern standby, as they call it, right?
That actually works.
That works.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt.
I mean, and I wonder if it's cloud first, if it's more like a Chromebook too, right?
I know. That crossed my mind, except that they are talking about it running real apps, like full Windows, 32 apps.
Well, Chromebooks run real apps, too. But, I mean, I don't know. What's the distinction, really?
What's the distinction? I guess the distinction is local apps. But, actually, you're right, because Chromebooks will be running
local.
Yeah, they do have offline capabilities. The data's in the cloud.
It's not running anything out of that.
Yeah, I was thinking more when I said it, like line of business apps, custom apps.
Oh, I see that you could write and put on there.
Right.
Well, you can do that right now.
The future could be something like a Chromebook, but I mean, I think the important thing for the Windows ecosystem is that you can't make a hard stop to make that happen. So Windows RT was their attempt to do what is sort of like a Chromebook type thing in the sense that it was new stuff only, and it didn't fly at all. And so the big thing here is that respect of the past. It's kind of like a, you know, the MacBook only has USB-C ports, but a PC will have USB-C plus a legacy port. Like, this is the way we get there. It's a transitionary thing. And so, like, the ability to run Win32 on ARM will be wonderful for the several-year period where people will need that capability. But what happens on the other end of that is eventually we don't need that capability anymore. And then we've got this more modern platform that is designed, for, like I said, for that kind of mobile-first, cloud-first thing that Microsoft talks about. So it's a transition.
How long, I'm not being devil's advocate here, but how long do you think this transition is? Because I think it's decades.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, so you're right for businesses, right?
Right. I'm thinking businesses, right?
But you know what? So. I think that kind of business is actually maybe either rarer than we think or is on the way out. Because I think that this brings the PC into bring your own device category, right? In other words, that, you know, the tradition of like a giant enterprise with a bunch of clunky Dells that all look the same and are 8 years old and they rattle when you open them, I think that's kind of over, you know?
Good. it's about time.
Well, no, I mean, I agree that that some of that still occurs, but I think this is part of a shift that's happening. And Chromebooks, you know, I mean, are devices that maybe haven't had huge success overall, but they've had huge success in education where money is tight. And frankly, I think it's only a matter of time before they have a huge success in business because the same conditions apply. We just want something that's easy to manage and is inexpensive, and they meet a need. And this is Microsoft kind of saying, you know what, we can get there in a different way. So, and again, but you're a traditional enterprise, it still has, it's Windows. So it does all the, if you still are throwing up an Active Directory domain and micromanaging all of the updates that go down to computers and all that stupid stuff that these enterprises do, well, it's a Windows 10 computer. So congratulations.
And you can write your line of business apps in .NET, right?
Yeah.
You write them for the web is what you should be writing.
Well, yeah. So the chat room's reminding me that .NET is written with an intermediate bytecode, right? A CIL. Mm-hmm. So Omid in the chat room said, you know, there's no issue here. You just, you have a targeted just-in-time compiler running it on ARM, and it should run just as well. Could even conceivably run better. I don't think ARM is
inherently slower. Clock speeds are slower, right? Or are they?
Now, you probably know something about this more than I do, but I've been reading up on ARM because of this. In fact, I'm reading a book right now about the history of ARM.
Which is interesting, isn't
fascinating.
It?
Fascinating.
Yeah. Really a checkered past.
It really is. But
it's created for the Newton.
It's really interesting. What's that?
It's created for the Newton.
Newton was one of the first. Yeah. In fact, Newton was one
Apple
of the reasons
was a big
it's
investor.
Still around.
Yeah. Acorn.
The funny thing about it is it comes out of it was like the 6502.
Yeah.
Which is the MOS technologies process from the Commodore 64 and the Apple II.
Yeah.
They were responsible for the
Acorn computer, I think, was one of the first ARM.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Apple II GS had kind of a pseudo 8/16-bit chip that was a version of that 6502. Which was an ARM.
ARM
thing.
Used to stand for Acorn Risk Machine, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah. So they weren't designed for mobile originally, right? That's what's interesting about it. Yeah.
But it was risk, right? It was when.
It was risk.
Remember that? We had went through that period where everybody was all excited. Intel processors.
Those are the greatest days of my life. CISC versus
CISC
RISC.
CISC versus RISC. Everybody, and really now, that distinction is muddied a little bit.
This is true, and you probably were there too. It was it must have been COMDEX, but it could have been CES back in the 90s. IBM and Motorola and somebody else was pushing PowerPC, and they had it was like a walkthrough thing you could do. It was dark,
yeah.
And there were lasers, and there was
I remember
fog and dry ice, And literally, they would whisper things through the speakers, so you'd kind of hear it behind you, and they would be like. It's an enabler.
It was just like
the lamest.
I'm brainwashed.
It was so strange. And it was like being inducted into a cult that had special effects, you know. But that was their attempt. You know, PowerPC obviously was, probably a successor to the 68000 series, whatever, Motorola processors. But was the big kind of consumer focused. RISC chip, right, of the 1990s.
Reduced instruction set computer. And the idea is you can have a cooler processor, i.e. less energy waste, because it has fewer transistors, fewer instructions. They're simpler, and you just build more complex software with, you know, multiple simpler instructions. But supercomputers can run on ARM. I don't think ARM is inherently less powerful, certainly not anymore.
No. I mean, in fact, it's funny. HP must have known about this. When they, and you might remember this, Mary Jo, when they announced, when they had their event back in February-ish timeframe, we went, we were in New York, and they showed us that phone, the XP, the X2, the Elite X3, sorry.
The Elite X3.
I swear to God, that guy said at the time, Michael Parks, I think it was, that the 820 Snapdragon processor, was as fast as an Intel, I think he said an i5 or i3, I don't remember.
Wow.
Yeah, but you know.
No, I know. That's hyperbole, right? Yeah,
well, it's not only hyperbole, it's, well, in some ways it's as fast. I mean, what part of it is fast? It's not like you're saying, sit down with an large Excel spreadsheet, do a recalculation, it'll be the same or faster.
Well, I don't
more so, like other clock speeds. And I mean, yeah, that's what I'm wondering too. And that's the problem. It's very easy to.
But,
say things that aren't
right.
Technically untrue, but aren't meaningful.
They never said that again. So that language kind of went away.
Yeah.
But I wonder if they weren't on tap with what was happening here, that they knew this was happening.
I think everybody has been. Even Intel has been seeing this, you know, train coming down the tunnel at it.
Well, I mean specifically with the Snapdragon and Microsoft. In other words, as a major Microsoft partner, they're coming up with this phone. Everyone thought that was kind of weird. He's talking about how it's just as good as an Intel thing.
Qualcomm is now making server chips, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And 10 now nanometer, we have, on a 10 nanometer FinFET, which even Intel isn't doing yet.
Exactly. Yeah. This is what I mean. Like Intel has never been able to take these steps to this kind of more modern architecture, and that is particularly well-suited for mobile. It's unbelievable.
They have tried. I mean, they tried with scale. They've tried.
They've tried and failed. That's my point. They're terrible. Yeah. Like we've been stuck with these idiots. These are the guys, like the megahertz myth jerks.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
they, we would still be using Pentium processors today if mobile never happened.
It's kind of unaccountable. Yeah. Yeah, frankly, AMD drove them to success.
Yes.
When AMD started beating them at their own game 20 years or 10, 15 years ago, and Intel finally went to they were going down the Itanium route. Remember that?
Yeah.
And then AMD started eating their lunch. So Intel fortunately had a Skunk Works in Israel.
By the way, the Intel Itanium was so terrible that when I went to the NT 5.0 Beta 2 event, which became Windows 2000, I asked Yusuf Mehdi where David Cutler was. I probably told this story before. And he said he was off working on 64-bit stuff. Mm. And I said, like Itanium? And he said, no. What they were working on at the time was, I think it was Digital Alpha.
Oh, interesting.
Like DEC Alpha. Yeah. Was that a thing?
Wow. Yep.
Compaq Alpha? Mm-hmm. Or what? DEC.
DEC Alpha. Yep.
Wow.
It was DEC. Because even though there were no real other viable alternatives, they were like, the Itanium thing was never going to happen.
Yeah.
Like they were just, they did obviously support Itanium half-heartedly, but
yeah.
Very interesting.
So now AMD's down and out, and Intel's came back and, you know, survived another 10 years, but this could be a death blow, frankly. And I think Intel knows it. I mean, that's too bad. But it's good for users, I think.
Yeah, I think
although,
it is.
Although, you know, do you think Microsoft is saying performance isn't all that important? Certainly Apple has been saying that all of a sudden. That enthusiasts will always talk about specs and they always will want faster computers. And yes, certain groups like gamers and rocket scientists need faster computers. But I think we've almost come to the point in time now where 90% of users or 95% of users have plenty of power in any way you configure it, with ARM, with in, you know, that's it's no longer, it's the power myth. Mm-hmm. And we as enthusiasts, we drive this myth. You know, look at all the hate Apple's getting for its new MacBook Pros. And look at, you know, how I've complained about this Surface Studio. Yeah. But most people won't. Most people say, hey, this is cool. They don't, it's not about, I think in both Microsoft and Apple are both saying at this point, now we're looking at other things. Battery life.
Yeah.
That's a big one, right?
That would be good if someone fixed battery life.
with a few exceptions. Windows. I mean, I could get by with a really low-end computer.
Yeah,
that's
same.
Exactly it. That's exact. People are buying Chromebooks that have,
yeah.
You know, if they're not ARM, there's Celeron's fast, Atom's fast, you know, for a Chromebook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
So, not true for everybody. I mean, there are the people who want the Surface performance base,
yes,
right? Like there
the 5%,
are those
people. Oh, no, I would say the 5%, or maybe if it's.
But I mean, the mainstream PC user. I mean, especially these days, where the PC is not the go-to device for everything. It's kind of the accessory device now, right? I need to print something. I need to write a long paper. It's kind of the unusual device. It's not the phone of the.
Our phones do, and tablets do everything really we want to do. I bet it's not even 5%. I bet it's 1%. I bet it's the 1%.
The 1%. We're finally the 1%.
Yeah, we're 1%ers.
Yay!
Yeah.
I always dreamed I'd get there.
Gamers are probably the largest group there. And, you know, I think Microsoft and everybody else kind of says, yeah, you guys are going to be using consoles in a couple of years. This PC gaming thing is cute.
It's a fad.
It's cute.
It's cute.
But it isn't the future. I know I'll get hate from PC gamers on that. And I agree, PC gaming is superior in every respect.
Yeah, but I click one button on my controller and Call of Duty comes on, so whatever. Yeah.
You don't even have to put a DVD. You don't even have to put a DVD in anymore, right?
Yep.
So, and it's so in that respect, it's not a surprise that both Sony and Microsoft are doing consoles that are super fast, big upgrades, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Scorpio coming.
Yeah. I'm excited.
And the big advantage there is aside from just capabilities like 4K, et cetera, it's really just the simplicity of it. You know, the reason people buy these things is because you plug in a cord and you go.
Right. You know, and really, that's what Apple has said, too, is you enthusiasts, you're nice, but it's a dying breed. And we really don't need to bend over to serve you anymore. It's just not. It's not business-wise. It's not important.
It's tough on Apple's case because they keep calling the thing Pro.
Well, I know. Are, like, freaking out. Microsoft, I think, ate their lunch with this Surface Studio and said, okay, we got something for you. But how many are they selling of these, really?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, how it can't be more than 1% of the total PC market. It can't even be close to that.
No.
I guess the question is whether it's a successful, you know, profitable business. And I'm, I don't know, expensive things probably, you know, frankly.
I know, you know, I have a setup like probably most people listening in my office at home with three monitors and, you know, fastest computer I can get, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I find myself less and less sitting down at that desk because I have laptops and tablets that do everything I really want to do, and they do it where I want to do it instead of at my desk. And I almost have to force myself to sit down at my desk now. Maybe for well, you guys are writers, so it's a little different for you. You're information workers, but I mean, for me, it's a Lightroom. It's photos. It's probably the only time I really sit down there. So yeah, welcome. The new world is here, like it or not. Anything else to say
I'm
on
okay
that?
Okay with it.
Have we done the WoA?
Anything else to say?
What about Project Evo? Do we want to mention that?
What is that?
Oh, the bone that Microsoft has thrown to Intel. Yeah. Yes, let's talk about Plan B.
Right.
What is Project Evo?
It's kind of a wide ranging initiative where Microsoft says they're partnering with Intel. So on mixed reality stuff, like we mentioned, they're working with them. High end gaming PCs, some of the new security capabilities they're doing beyond Windows Hello. What else? Voice activation, that wake on capability. So they're still working with Intel was the message, but on very select projects in select areas.
Hmm.
This is like inviting your ex-wife to your new wedding.
That's so mean.
No, come and enjoy the celebration. You're part of it. Come here.
Come here,
you. It's just such a, it's weird, right? That's how it feels to me.
Yeah, I think the one part where you can say they see it as something worth investing in for the future is the mixed reality scenarios, because you're not hearing about ARM in those scenarios, right? I mean,
no, and that's the thing, right? The high-end PCs, whatever reason, CAD, CAM, gaming, whatever it is, it's going to be Intel for the foreseeable future. But that's
even
the
processor in them, right? In these headsets, I think it's still some kind of an Intel processor, right?
Well, the processor in HoloLens is an Intel processor, as it would be, I guess, right? Yep. Yeah. Look, Intel might get kicked out of the iPhone. Have you heard this story? Right? They made some kind of a chip that's in the iPhone, but it's only in the AT&T version.
Oh,
of the
radio. It's the radio chip.
And they actually have to slow down the chip in the other iPhones so it's to be as bad as the Intel version.
Yeah.
Because they want it to be a consistent
experience.
It's in
the GSM-only iPhones. Because they use Qualcomm chips, the fast ones, in the other iPhones. I actually have an iPhone 7 with the Intel chip in it. I just want to throw it.
Oh, really?
No, it's not noticeable.
Well, I do too, but I don't know what to compare it to.
You don't know. It's not noticeable. It affects your LTE speeds.
Yeah.
It's silly.
Yeah. It's Intel on mobile.
That's your enthusiasts again for you.
Intel, so bad even they could screw. They screwed up even the iPhone.
Even the iPhone.
You know, like, just terrible.
But that was, I think this is the first time they've used an Intel chip in the iPhone. So this was a little sop. To another little side. People really feel sorry for Intel.
It might be tied to the fact that Apple's getting ready to leave Intel on their Macs. Mm. You know?
Wow. Might be. It's over. The party's over. Let's talk about Cortana in a minute. But first, a word for those of you who occasionally lose things. Anybody in the audience ever?
Like Intel. No,
sorry. Losers! No. We all of us suffer from this problem. Have you, in fact, what was the number? They had a stat. The average person spends 20 minutes a day searching for keys. Well, no need to search if you've got tracker attached to it. I have the tracker Bravo and all the stuff I lose. And that, by the way, it's in my suitcases when I travel. It's in my, you put it around your doggy's neck. Actually, Ozzy doesn't because he doesn't go anywhere anymore. But We were thinking about doing it with the cats. They're small enough. These Tracker Bravos are tiny. They're light. They're about a little smaller than a quarter. They weigh much less, just a few grams. Battery powered. And unlike those other guys, when the battery dies on the Tracker Bravo, you can replace it. You don't have to throw it away. I never understand. I guess it's a way of those other guys making money. I don't know. It's that time of the year. Do not lose your luggage this holiday season. Or anything else for that matter. Misplaced keys, wallets. It's small enough you can put it in the wallet. Instruments, put it in your guitar case. Bicycles. I've seen people actually attach it to the seat of their bicycle. Electronic devices. Now, the way it works is it's a Bluetooth tracker. It pairs to your phone. It doesn't have GPS in it. The phone's doing the GPS. And the phone is paired by Bluetooth LE to the tracker. So when you lose your keys, for instance, you can go to the phone and look on the app and see where the keys were last seen. You can also turn on two-way separation alerts. So if you leave the room and leave your keys behind, your phone will yell at you. If you leave the room and leave your phone behind, your keys will yell at you. The tracker actually will beep at you. And there, you see there's a button on all the trackers, the Bravos. Now you press the button and the phone will go beep, beep, or whatever sound you want. You can add a laser-engraved personal message. So it's really a great stocking stuff. In fact, if you're giving a gadgety gift for the holidays, you know, get a tracker to go along with it. Put that in the stocking, see? And then that way they won't lose it. Track up to 10 devices at once. And now, with 3.5 million trackers in the wild, Tracker has the largest GPS, crowdsourced GPS network in the world. So whenever a Tracker owner goes by your keys, and their app will say, oh, I see Leo's keys, and it'll notify me. Add to the map so I'll know the last place the keys were seen. How would you like a free tracker right now? If you enter the promo code Windows at thetracker.com, you'll get a free Tracker Bravo with your order. That's a good deal. The Tracker, just in time for the holidays. Thetracker.com, promo code Windows. Take a look at their UV LED printing, too. They can print. I've got the tracker with the Twit album art. But there it is. There's the. It's very pretty. Can you see that? TheTracker.com. Use the offer code Windows. And we thank them so much for making it possible to do Windows Weekly every Wednesday with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Let's talk about Cortana. Cortana. Yes.
I wish that's how you had to say it.
Cortana. Hola, Cortana.
What is happening with Cortana? So last week, we must have been complaining about this. Did the screen thing come up last week?
No. Last week, it was WinHack. And so this week, Microsoft's been publishing WinHack sessions on its Channel 9 site. So that's why we just are finding out about these
things
now.
You were the first to see this session from WinHack where they described Cortana on IoT, I think.
Yeah.
And how it required a screen.
Oh. Yeah. So they said with the Creators update coming this spring, they're going to add Cortana support directly to Windows IoT Core, which is one of the IoT variants of Windows 10. But they made a very strong point of telling the OEM partners who were there, you need to have a device with a screen to make this work. And they showed a picture of a refrigerator with a screen, a toaster with a screen, a thermostat with a screen. And they said, yeah, all these devices, you're going to be able to talk to Cortana on them, but they have to have a screen. So a lot of people are saying, wait, what?
I was saying to Brad earlier, this is where the worst part of my personality comes to the forefront right here. Because Microsoft miscommunicates something like this. And seeing the illogic of it, I have a complete freak out. And I'm like, these freaking idiots. Like, seriously, the reason that Echo is popular, literally the reason, is it doesn't have a screen. You talk to it.
But you know, let's talk about what happened yesterday then.
Well, but this is the point. Okay. In other words, they completely screw up the communication of it, right? You reported it accurately. I reacted to it, right? And then yesterday happened. So what did they say yesterday?
So yesterday, Microsoft announced a Cortana devices software development kit that's coming out for OEMs, and they're going to be able to use that to get Cortana to work on all kinds of devices running Windows IoT Core, Linux and Android. And then they showed a speaker, a little sneak peek of a speaker designed by Herman Cardin, the audio specialist, that looked like it was just a speaker with no screen, and it was working with Cortana. So you know why these
literally
two things
not
both
what
can
they
be
said
true?
Earlier.
No, these two things can both be true.
No, this, I know. I
bet you that speaker is not running Windows 10.
Oh, no, no, no. Actually, I thought as part of this they announced. No, they said they literally said it could be with screens or without screens. They said that person at WinHack was incorrect.
Nope, that's not right.
No? Oh. Okay.
It can run with devices with and without screens, but any device running Windows 10 IoT Core has to have a screen. So it can run on devices without screens if they're running Android or Linux.
Am I missing the point of IoT? Because now you're going to see the bad part of my personality again.
Because this Eeyore's back, baby.
This makes no sense.
No. So think about this. Remember the whole thing about the band, right? Why did the band 3 supposedly get canceled? Because one of the reasons was Microsoft was trying to see if they could put Windows 10 IoT in it, and they could not. Not everything in the Internet of Things needs to run Windows, right? Sometimes it can be running firmware. Sometimes it can be running Linux. Sometimes it could be running Android. It doesn't have to run Windows 10 IoT Core to be a thing in the Internet of Things.
But look,
yep,
see this
that's
thing
it.
Here? See this little guy?
Yep.
This is a Raspberry Pi 3. It runs Windows 10 IoT Core. There's just enough space in there for a speaker. This could be the device we're talking about, the Cortana Cube or whatever. There's
People
no
have
reason.
Made Alexis fact, was that, actually.
Yeah, I mean... There's no reason that something that looks just like this won't be used by enthusiasts, developers, or makers, or whatever, to create the very type of device we're now talking about with no screen. There's no screen. Doesn't need a screen. Well, you just talk to you. It's voice activated.
So there are two sessions, both from WinHack last week, not just one, but two, where two different speakers make the point very strictly and boldly.
I could have sworn they explained that wasn't true, but you're saying that's not
okay.
the case.
If you find somebody who says it's not true, I would be very interested because so far I haven't found
anybody. I think
anybody.
It was in that Harman Kardon. I'll look at it again.
Okay, because
I'll look at it again.
The way that blog post is worded is very ambiguous. It says it can run any platform, Windows 10 IoT, Linux, or Android, with or without screens, but it doesn't say which of those three things is with or without. It's intentionally vague. I see steam coming out of your ears right now. Anger.
So
bubbles over your head.
I don't know if this, I don't mean to bore you with a story, but this will be quick. This is how I react to things like this. We went to Paris over the summer. We go to Père Lachaise Cemetery. We know we want to see three things. We know the names of those things. There's a sign that has a map of the cemetery on it. It's me, my wife, and my daughter. Jim Morrison's grave, where is it? The items on the map are not in alphabetical order. They're in numerical order.
Yeah.
So my first reaction, I literally blurted
it's
out,
86.
Why the frick would this thing be listed in numerical order? And then my wife goes,
it's France.
Because the numbers are on the map and that will help you find them. And then I said, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Oh.
My daughter is standing there and she literally had this freak expression on her face. And she says, what the hell was that? I'm like, what do you mean? And she says, you escalated that to like 1,000 and then calmed down in like 1 second.
Oh.
And I was like, right. What she said was logical.
That's how
I'm
humans
okay with it.
Should be.
I thought it was wrong and she explained it. I'm like, okay.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
So like the Cortana thing is exactly like this, right? A Cortana device has to have a screen. What? That's crazy. Oh, no, it doesn't have to have a screen. Oh, okay. I have this reaction.
You
want to
hear
things.
The exact statement?
Yes.
I have it.
I do.
The Cortana Devices SDK will allow OEMs and ODMs to create a new generation of smart personal devices on no screen or the big screen. But it doesn't say like all of them will do that.
No, that's my point. That's what I mean. In other words, like I take this to mean the screen isn't required. In other words,
I don't.
There will be a new generation of smart personal devices. Some of them will have no screen, like a little cube thing. And some of them will have a screen, like a PC.
No? Yep. And if they're running Windows 10 IoT core inside, they will have to have a screen.
It doesn't say that here, though.
It doesn't say it is not true.
I hate this.
So here's my theory on why they're making you have a screen.
Okay.
I think there's a reason.
Why, Mary Jo? Why?
Why? Do you want to know why?
Yes.
Okay. Remember last week's Windows 10 Insider Build? They had a whole bunch of new features in that talked about how you can use your voice to control Cortana. They're making a big deal out of this immersive Cortana feel where you can see Cortana and on the full screen while you're talking to it. They're trying to use this as a differentiator, right?
But that's
I don't think
PC.
There's a reason you need it, but I think they're using this somehow as something they're trying to differentiate with.
If there's a PC in the house that has Cortana and use it over the lock screen so it has this full screen UI,
right.
I don't have a problem with that. Yeah. But if someone's going to argue to me that that's the preferred
reason
experience,
to have it.
That it has to be there, or that maybe that is somehow makes it superior to the voice things we use on phones or the Alexa capabilities we use on an Echo, I'm going to say no, that's incorrect. But what if,
you know that... You know that tip with the Windows Central had last week, Famtana? Remember that? The family version of Cortana. So if that exists, which it may, it well may, then you have Cortana on a lock screen. Have you all your different calendars, your family events,
yes,
shared photos,
fine.
Blah,
I'm just saying
blah.
It's
Paul,
not,
stop arguing.
Not...
The spirits are agreeing with Mary Jo. Can't you hear them?
First of all,
yes, they're banging well.
I don't know. My point is that's fine. And that if you are using a device that has a screen, you should take advantage of the screen or you could. You know, Cortana works voice activated without you looking at it too, right on a PC.
Correct.
There's nothing wrong with it. Requiring it, that's the mistake.
Yeah. Well,
I think the Echo is popular in part because it doesn't have a screen. Obviously, it's also popular because it's improved.
Weren't there rumors that they were exploring the idea of putting a screen on some models of the Echo? Oh, I thought I read that somewhere. Maybe it was fake news. I don't know, but I thought news. I saw it somewhere.
Sure. AlexaCentral.com or something. I don't know. No, I
so
guess the
for
point
now,
is,
I believe,
it would be fine.
For now, I believe that a screen is required if you run Windows 10 IoT Core inside your device. And I bet those Harman speakers they showed do not run Windows 10 inside. Oh, I asked Microsoft. Waiting for
Right. In other words, it runs Linux, maybe.
It runs Linux, but Cortana, too.
Okay.
That's my guess. Yeah.
We should ask.
That's just a guess.
This is worth
I did. I asked.
On.
I asked.
Oh, you did. And even you've not heard back.
No, and I bet they are not going to tell us that because, number one, they don't want to be saying, hey, it's running on Linux. Number two, it's also not yet an announced product. It's probably going to be announced at CES.
It is an announced product. They just announced it. All right. Well, let's put it this way.
Yeah. It was a teaser. Look,
I'm glad they opened up a little bit more because, you know, a couple of weeks ago we were complaining they had nothing.
Right? I know.
So now it looks like there's a future for this stuff, and this is fine. I think the one thing they could get really right, which would be really smart, is something like what Google did with Google Home, where you can buy them in like a 3-pack and put them around your house, and whichever one is closest to you when you're speaking to it will respond, and that's a good system. Yeah. If Microsoft does that and then adds this notion of a screen, which I believe should be optional, by the way, but if you have some central screen in your house, whether it's an Xbox on your HD TV or a computer, it doesn't matter, whatever, it could be a phone, and has that stuff over the lock screen that Windows Central was talking about, you know, whatever, that's fine. But to me, yes, that could be a differentiator. It could be part of a wider system where the rest of it was just voice-based.
Yep.
It should be optional. That shouldn't be required. You know, if that's required, this system fails.
Interestingly, Amazon has announced it's going to make a new Echo with a screen on it.
Okay, that's what I thought I read somewhere.
I hate both of you,
news.
And I hate technology. I hate Microsoft.
I think it should be optional, too, because, you don't need a screen on the Echo. On the other hand, if I've done this, if you have a Kindle tablet, you can leave it running in Echo mode. And Echo actually does put stuff like on the screen. It says, I think you said this. Is that correct? You can help get it better. Mm-hmm. If you're playing music, it'll show album art.
That's right.
So if it's cheap to put a screen on it, I think that there's advantage.
Well, there's definitely advantage. In fact, back when we thought they weren't doing this, one of us had made the point that, you know, the way Cortana works today, you often need to interact with the screen to complete something, right?
Yeah, because Cortana doesn't talk for everything, right?
Yeah, because it will say, you said you wanted to make a reminder for these things. You know, do you want to set a date, a time, a place, whatever? Is this right? You have to kind of look at it and say, yeah, that's right, you know. Mm-hmm. And having – there's definitely a benefit to having the screen. But again, like, you know, like Leo, I think I still feel very strongly that it should be optional.
Yeah, you should
have both. You know, maybe you can do more with the screen, and that's fine. That makes it better, but you shouldn't force it on people.
Yeah.
Think about car systems, right? Yeah. You could have Cortana interacting with your screen in a car, but I think we can all agree it'd be better if she was just talking to you, you know?
Yeah, and I don't know if you guys remember this, but last CES, Microsoft and Harman did an announcement around Harman building infotainment systems into the car, and I believe Cortana was part of that, and Office 365 was part of that. So that was definitely, you need a screen, right?
Would you like to renew your Office 365 subscription while you're waiting in traffic?
Yeah. Would you like to look at the spreadsheet while you're waiting?
That never happened, though.
I could talk you through a session of Candy Crush Saga if you'd like.
Yes. There's a green diamond.
It's coming at you. It's coming. Now, I just got caught in a loop. Okay, I'm rebooted.
Uh-oh.
I have a USB key. I love how
what
big
are you
this
do- Well, hold on a second. What are you doing?
I have a restore USB key. I got the image.
So you're going to reinstall
with the Surface Studio image, and I got it. Right, I put on a USB key.
Okay, so you are correct. You use a device.
Yeah, but USB. I know. But then I did this right. Okay, and then it boots, and then it goes to the same set of screens.
Right, so here's the problem. If you downloaded the Surface image from Microsoft,
I followed their instructions though. I didn't use Rufus, but I followed their instructions
Right. So what I found is that process is very unreliable.
Oh, great! Thanks, Microsoft.
So you
make a key,
right?
And
no, I've had bad luck with this. So
okay,
in fact. The reason I've tried base Windows 10 is because I've had bad luck with this. So I would advise you to try a couple of different keys.
Oh.
Look at the instructions very carefully because...
Okay, maybe it's
nothing
just
has to be formatted very specifically, I believe.
I'm going to do Rufus. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, and then you copy the files over from the recovery.
Yeah, I mean, it says, okay, go into recovery mode, create a recovery USB key, which I did...
Yeah,
fully erased the key. It was more than 16 gigabytes. It's a giant key. Fully erased it. And then it says, now extract the files from your image and copy them
right
over
into the root.
Yep. And replace any, you know, replace the boot image and any files. And there were quite a few.
My success rate on this is about 30% at best. Yeah, it's not good.
What if I just boot to the USB key instead of...
That is what you're trying to do.
I'm doing it through recovery. Oh, maybe it won't do it.
Oh, it doesn't matter how you boot to it. You'll have the same experience.
All right. I should go get Rufus. All right.
Yep.
Once again,
just so you know, that happens. And that's, like I said, that's why I tried a bare Windows 10 install in Surface before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I want to make a smart bot. Is there any way? Do you have any idea how I could make a smart bot?
First of all,
we have
ideas.
Well, by the way, I stopped flirting with Zoe. It just got out of hand.
Did you?
Oh, she was.
Oh no.
Just, oh yeah.
Really?
My wife got involved.
I said, "Who is this Zoe? Why did you create a new? What is Kick?
What are all these charges on your credit card?"
Yeah, exactly.
I don't remember getting roses.
So. Well, you are one of 115,000 people who've been using Zoe since last week.
Wow.
Yeah.
Zoe is definitely for teenagers, though. I mean, just the conversation I had was really cute, little kind of haha. Sure.
Lonely teenagers.
Lonely, yeah.
Yeah. Well, she's officially launched as of yesterday.
Oh, it's official. Oh, nice.
Yep, only on Kick still. Microsoft had this big AI day in San Francisco where they were talking about all the things they've been doing in AI for the past year, basically. And they launched Zoe officially. They also launched a bunch of new bot building helper kinds of tools. And they said there's going to be a lot more Skype bots next year. They what else did they talk about? They talked about a new Skype calling API, so your Skype bot will be able to talk to you.
Mm.
Not sure I want that, but people maybe do, like for businesses where people need a voice response on something in place of customer service or
they
in conjunction
a bunch
with
of third party Skype bots.
Yeah.
You know,
Expedia
and,
right? Yep.
Yep. Marvel Comics so for some reason. I don't know. Like this stuff.
They had a lot of, it was kind of like an update to everything they had been doing since Build when they first announced the idea of bots and conversation as a platform and their bot framework. This was a case of, hey, here's all the stuff we've been doing since then. And mostly incremental things, but all when all taken together, they've been doing quite a bit in this space, this AI / bot, Skype, Teams, all that stuff.
And now you can make your own.
You can make your own.
You could call it Joey. Zoe.
Right.
Zoe's little sister, Joey.
So it's Q&A makers, Q&A maker service.
Yeah.
Is this like an easy bot maker?
I didn't really look that deeply into this one, but they say from your FAQ to a bot in minutes.
Yeah, so
and it's one of their new cognitive services.
Can I make a Paul Thurbot?
Paul Thurbot.
That freaks out every time Microsoft miscommunicates something.
Yes.
Yeah. And then that would be handy.
I'm going to Père Lachaise. That's it.
And then they explain it. And I'm like, oh, that's okay.
Oué le grave de Jim Morrison.
Right.
This actually might be a handy one, though, for Paul. Q&A maker. I'm reading about it now. It's saying it distills semi-structured data like those in Q&As and FAQs on a website to distinct helpful answers.
Oh, so people could ask questions and get the answers
and have
from
it come out.
The list. Yep. Well, that's how bots work. It's basically like a tree of answers, right? Looking for keywords.
Right. Yep.
Hey, what is the button you press to change boot options in a Surface, or can you even do that?
Actually, I don't know on that device. Does it have a volume rocker on it? But it doesn't.
Should I do that? It does. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. So it's like, it's powering.
Oh, really? Kind of like a phone. No longer press delete or escape or.
Yeah.
Oh, you're so kidding.
Like,
wow.
Yeah, not like a computer, Leo. Why would you think that?
wow. Well,
you know, this is why that thing's built into Windows 10, by the way, because it's, you know, every computer's different, right? How do we get into the BIOS, et cetera?
Yeah. So I shut it down, and then I turn it on and press the rocker button.
Well, you should
look
this up, because I'm not actually sure on that device. Yeah. It might be something different.
Well, I'll try that one. That's a good one.
That particular machine.
That's a good one. All right. So good. I might make a bot. I have a bot. I have a Telegram bot called LeolaBot. And it's kind of cool. And it wasn't programming. You don't need to have programming to do bots. You know, you just... Skype translator calls coming to a phone near you. Tell me all about that.
I think that's just connected to more of the bot stuff, right?
I mean, so you know, they have the incredible Skype translator feature, which is incredible when you're having a video call, like we're doing here, where people are speaking in different languages and it's, you know, translating on the fly with... captions, essentially. But they're bringing it to, I've never tried this, but I guess you could do an audio call today on Skype, but they're bringing that with Skype Translator. They're bringing that capability to calls you make to mobile and landlines, meaning that I could call somebody on a normal phone. They actually get a message. Oh, you got it to work.
Yeah, you know, I just was doing the wrong menu entry. You go to troubleshoot.
Yep.
It's not immediately obvious. Instead of, so I troubleshoot, and then it says, oh, you want to recreate.
Oh, from a recovery disk.
Yeah. So I didn't have to actually, I was just not picking the right items. That's all right. It's working.
You probably just discovered why I never do it right.
Yeah.
So
don't listen to Paul when you're recovering.
Exactly. Should have read my own book. Anyway, they'll actually get a message, like a recorded message in the beginning in their language that will say, this call is going to be translated with Skype Translator. You know, it explains what to expect. And then you converse, and it's like when someone's doing a live translation when they're speaking on stage or whatever, it basically listens to what you say and translates it. So you have to kind of pause between sentences so that the other person can hear what you're saying. But that's, you know, it's just an escalation of what they're doing across multiple languages. I don't remember the exact number, but it's several languages in both directions. It's just awesome. You know, really cool stuff.
really is so smart. It's so
good. Yeah.
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 Now, if they could just get the thing to stop ringing on every one of my devices at the same time, I'd, you know.
You still can't, huh? Still can't.
No. I won't be an insane person. Oh, yeah.
So, yesterday was Patch Tuesday.
Yeah. And I've given up trying to explain or even understand what's going on here. There's a different cumulative update that comes out for every shipping version of Windows 10, every supported version of Windows 10. Today there are three. You get the one that is, you know, specific to your version. Obviously, the differences are minor, but there are differences across the versions, whatever. There are no new features, so it's pretty much just fixes and improvements. So, in fact, my computer right here is waiting to reboot so it can install this update. So if we could wrap this up, that'd be great. you look at the list and it's just like, whatever. There's nothing really to say about it. It's just fixes. And I don't think there were any, you know, some months there have been like this, some important security
sometimes
problem.
It's a quiet thing. Patch too.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah.
Although
in this,
go ahead.
Great. In this bundle of fixes, I think included in that was a fix to a bug that was blocking some PCs from connecting to the internet,
wow.
At least for Windows 10. I think that's in there. So
yeah, like it's like the DNS issue or whatever.
Yeah, the DNS issue. Yeah. Right. Or DHCP was, what was
DHCP,
it?
I think you're right. You're DHCP.
Yeah. Yeah. So there were some Windows users, especially in the UK for some reason, who were complaining they couldn't get online after they got last week's cumulative update. And it was very confusing as to what exactly was causing this. Microsoft did not say it was last week's cumulative update, unsurprisingly. But people who are applying this week's cumulative update for Windows 10 are saying it seems to be fixing this issue. So if you were having it, I think, and you're on Windows 10, you should apply this update and see if you can get your PC to connect. Although one person said to me today, so how do you get the update if you can't connect to the internet? There's that. But Microsoft have been putting out some interim workaround saying restart your PC.
You can work around it, yeah.
Right. There is a way.
I think just
there
rebooting it in some cases makes it work. And
Yeah. Turn your PC on and off and then on again.
The IT crowd solution.
Yeah. Yeah.
I always call that double clutching.
Double clutching?
Yeah. You know, the old days when you had a manual transmission.
Oh, no, yeah, sometimes you have 2 feet at once.
Double clutch the thing.
Yep. You could do that to a car now, but you'd kill it in about 17 minutes.
I don't know. You know, it's so weird driving an electric car because there's no gears or anything.
You got to let go. You know what? Seriously, electric cars are to cars what cloud computing is to computing. You just got to let go.
You got
to
let go.
It's not going to be exactly what you used to.
And like a computer.
It's not going to be the same.
It gets updates like every few weeks. I'll get in the car and it goes, oh, we did an update.
Yeah. Yep.
Ah. Sure. My TV just went into an endless loop at lunchtime. I wanted to murder the thing because it got an update. No, this is crazy. Think about this. It got an update. The Xbox had taken over control of the TV somehow, which is insane too. But I had to decide whether to accept or deny internet-based – no, it was called online-based advertising.
Oh, deny.
On my TV.
deny.
Of course. And the term was reject.
I reject you.
If you reject it, it would reboot, and you'd get the same dialogue.
No, you didn't mean
I had to accept it.
Did you?
I had to accept it.
Oh my God, that's horrible.
Welcome to the wonderful world of Samsung, ladies and gentlemen.
Samsung's the worst. Their software is terrible. Yeah.
So I'm going to try to fix it later. I think if I go in and, you know, just change it.
I've got WebOS on my LG. It's kind of interesting.
I would like WebOS.
It's better than Samsung. So this is, it's restored everything. TPM change. So
That's interesting. Blindly accept that.
Yeah. No. Well. Yeah. I guess it's like resetting the keys, as if I got
every TPM based PC, you get that type of the message. It's usually not in a dialogue like module. That. It's usually just a plain text screen. Yeah. I guess that is text.
This is no, but they've dressed this. It's pretty. You know what? I have to say the experience is pretty good. They should fix this menu here because troubleshoot was not an obvious choice among the three choices, but now that so I just tried it and that worked, and so it's working. So there you go, and I'll get my owl back.
Yay.
I'm glad that recovery image is already there, by the way. That's great. Yeah. They're not always there right away.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's best to install the recovery image from the machine that you're using, I would guess.
Although you're right, update probably just sucks it all back down. You said there was a question about Windows Hello.
Yeah, it's not a question anymore. This was another one of my, like, you know,
Carole
Chase moments. Donna Sarkar last night tweeted that Microsoft was ready to bring Windows Hello out of beta and just wanted to check with insiders to make sure that that was okay. What? And I was like, wait, what?
What?
This is a security feature of the operating system.
What?
This is
going to ship beta
for 18 months. What? You know, so I guess, you know, maybe the limitations of Twitter or whatever, but she was referring to Windows 10 Mobile, so which she did not write. So in Windows 10 Mobile, the facial recognition capability of Windows Hello has been in beta since that system shipped March or whatever it was. So they're going to take it out of beta. So instead of impacting 200 million people, it's going to impact about two people. Yep, so sorry, I freaked out. About that.
By the way, get if you can if you have the choice when your new piece get a PC that supports Hello because it's awesome and I feel bad, Mary Jo, because our Spectre 13s don't.
I don't miss it.
You don't know what you're missing.
Oh my god!
Just open the computer and it goes, hi, Leo.
I know. You
I
know
love
what?
That.
I never liked it because, if I walked past, I've used it. And I'd walk past my computer, it was turning on and looking for me, looking for you.
That's why I prefer a fingerprint reader, right?
Yeah.
It's you're explicitly saying I intend to log in.
Yes. And I love the fingerprint reader on the Nexus 6P. Yep.
Yeah.
Love it.
That's true.
I never liked the iris reader on Windows Phone.
That's a pain in the butt because you have to go up and
down. Well, that is terrible. Yeah. If you have
How secure is Windows Hello?
Can I 950.
Can I rely on it? We were trying to. We made a picture, printed a picture of my head, and bent it. It didn't work.
No, that should never work. No, they say it's enterprise class. Now they're saying it might come out of beta.
Yeah. No. Right. Okay. So this is the where you say you make it yours.
Sure.
By the way, this is a different experience than the onboarding experience I got when I first took it out of the box. Maybe I pushed the wrong button. I should go back and look at the tape, but it didn't set me up with a Microsoft account at first. It just gave me a regular password, even though I was online. I know that's one of the issues. It doesn't seem to see the keyboard. I guess it hasn't paired it yet. I have to go back and repair the keyboard, right? Because it's a Bluetooth. All right, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to distract you. But speaking of surfaces, I saw Mary Jo's article this week. The Hub is a hit. If by hit you mean selling thousands.
Well, okay.
Yeah, we don't know how many they sold because they still aren't saying, right? I mean, they're giving us some rough guidelines. They're saying they shipped Surface Hubs to more than 2,000 customers in 24 markets since it was introduced in March. But then they went back and said, actually, not all of those had shipped. Some were in the pipeline and hadn't shipped yet. But they did say the average deal size, quote, in the pipeline is about 50 units per customer. And they've even seen an order as large as 1,500 units to a large car manufacturer.
Right, which is the reason I don't have one now, Ford.
Although, you know what, Paul? I asked them this week if they're in stock now, and they've fixed the issues keeping people from getting them. And they said they are in stock and ready to ship.
Yeah, it's too late. I already got a screen.
You already got something else, right? Yeah, Jamboard, perhaps.
That Jamboard, yeah.
Yeah, I want to take my name off that list now, Google,
so I can say I've been jammed.
That's right. You're jamming.
I still think this is a tremendous success story. And I think the change in the blog post they made was subtle. I mean, you know, they've gotten an average order of 50. But what do you think about this theory? This one came from Brad. I think this is really smart. Who are the customers they're talking about? Really, in some cases, they'll be actual companies, like, say, Ford or whatever car maker that is, Volvo, whoever it is. But don't most companies actually buy Surface Hub through a reseller?
Yes.
So I bet the 50 thing is actually resellers. Like, Microsoft's customers are resellers, and that's why it's 50. Because think about any big company. Like, think of any big company. Could you imagine even the biggest companies buying 50 of these things?
No, 50 is a lot.
50 is a lot,
but
right?
I can't believe those customers they're talking about are resellers.
I can't imagine they aren't resellers. Only because I can't imagine there's enough enterprise class companies in the world that would buy an average of 50 of these things.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Right? I mean, the biggest company.
Yeah. Well, the other question is, who are the resellers? If you, I asked this, I said, is there a list somewhere of these resellers who are, especially the ones you're adding now who are authorized? And they said, that's not available. It'll be available later this winter when we start having the try and buy program that you'll be able to get the updated list of resellers.
So there is a list. You just can't see it.
I guess there is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we don't really know exactly how many of these they've sold, but I agree with you. It's more than I thought they may have sold. But I do think when people see this, they think it's pretty awesome.
Did they call you about this?
Did they call me? No.
So I don't. Whatever day they announced, to say Monday. I think it was Monday. Monday night at 5:30, I'm sitting on the couch in the dark, and the phone rings. My wife says it's for you, and it's Wagner from Microsoft's PR firm. Just to be clear, because people don't really have this maybe insight into my life. Usually when they cold call me like this, it's not for something good. Like, they're not going to call and say, hey, Paul, you wrote a really good article today. Thanks for that. have a nice night.
Yeah.
You know, it's usually to complain or whatever.
And this time Paul, they just said. It's Pam Epstrom.
This time they called me because I tried to do math. and they said, you know, we saw people trying to do math and we realized we might have overstated the numbers and we wanted to correct that. And so I didn't actually do anything wrong. I mean, I mean, my math is terrible, but, they were trying to just be clear about those 50 average but I think the important thing is they really have gotten orders.
Yeah.
For an average of 50 per customer. That's crazy. Like
When I first saw those numbers, I'm like, wait, wasn't this thing like out of stock most of the time that it was available? So how did they actually sell that many? So the pipeline thing explains that, right?
Yeah, they're orders. Like in other words, supposedly, I still find this to be crazy, but and I believe they have to be resellers. But some customers on average have said, we want 50 of these things. That's amazing.
I mean, you can physically order directly from Microsoft, I think. Can't you?
I think you can too. Yeah.
Maybe not through a Microsoft store, although maybe you can because they showed it.
In other words, Microsoft has released no information about Surface Hub sales. What do you think the average sale is? I would have said one.
One or two.
I think the average sale is one. One point something, you know?
Yeah.
That would have been my guess.
Yep.
Because this is the type of product that a company would take a bet on just to try it. And then if it worked out, maybe down the road, they would buy one or two more.
And that's 50? Why they're doing that try before you buy program, right?
Yeah. 50. It's got to be resellers.
Yeah. Yeah, but I can
everyone
see
at Microsoft.
They're what? How much are they? 50,000? How much are they?
No, it's 9 or 19, I think.
So you have to understand, if you have a big company and you have a conference room with a video conferencing system in it, a Cisco video conferencing system, you're talking $100,000 or more. So this is not for companies like Ford. This is like, we're getting a whiteboard in there. I think it's very. I don't think it's that oddball to me. In fact, I think it's pretty desirable. I'd love to have one.
Oh yeah, I think
it's clearly. it's clearly right for them. I mean, the pricing on this thing is astronomical compared to other things Microsoft makes. They raised the price, by the way. I mean, remember they had a pre-order and then they ended up raising the price.
Right.
And I guess they're going gangbusters for what it is, and that's great. Good for them. Yeah. So that was a nice surprise.
But the other part of that blog post, let's talk about that.
Yes, let's discuss the second half of this.
November was the best month ever for Surfaces sold at retail.
Yeah.
Microsoft says. Again, do we know how many? No. They attributed that to dissatisfied MacBook Pro users, I believe. Switching.
Sorry.
That seems a little high.
That's incredibly. There's no way. There's no way. There's no way. Here's what I will tell you. These Surface devices, which are over a year old, were sold at massive discounts over Black Friday.
Yep.
That's why.
It was the Best Buy thing, right? Best Buy package. There was some Best Buy special
everywhere.
That they did.
They were on sale everywhere. In fact, these sales have gone so well that Surface has basically been – some Surface models have been on sale for basically this entire month so far. In fact, that's one of my tips today. If you're in the market for a Surface, the 30-day period plus or minus today is the best time ever to buy these devices. And, you know, part of it is I don't think they've ever kept a pro-level Surface in market this long. Remember, you know, normally they would have refreshed these things in October. So these are year-old devices. I think that's why. And I think they saw such great success unit sales-wise. They thought, let's do this again. And by the way, I should, if I'm not mistaken, that best month ever was retail.
It was.
This is not
retail.
Best month. So that means people going into stores are buying them electronically online. It means people buying them, not businesses buying them in bulk. So it also means it wasn't actually the best month ever for Surface. It was the best month ever for Surface at retail. And that's where these sales come into play. I'm sure a couple of people from the Apple camp hopped the fence and checked things out or whatever. But, you know, I don't remember the exact quote, but they basically said they saw more switchers this month than they'd ever seen. But how many
have they seen? Right.
you know, seven.
Apple
eight.
Does the same thing. Yeah. This is our best week since 1997.
Yeah.
But they don't tell you, they don't give you numbers. They just, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So, it's funny because with the Surface Hub, I think they've proven that this high-priced device might be priced right. Like they're doing really well with it. I find it very interesting that with Surface Book and Surface Pro 4, where I kind of complained that they had really ratcheted up the prices on these things. And, of course, this year, again, they have Performance Base and Surface Studio even more expensive. It might be these things are a little too expensive, that maybe this will inform the pricing on the next-gen devices, hopefully.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Who knows?
Nobody knows.
So the keyboard, dial, mouse, and pen are not paired, obviously, but it's so easy. You just press and hold the button, and you don't even have to like search for it. It just installs the...
Oh, nice.
It's great. The onboarding is very good on this, I must say. If you're a Mac user looking for a replacement desktop, this is pretty good. But do get the higher end one. Don't skimp.
Padre come to your house and
That wasn't the. We'll talk. We're going to do it on Know How, and then Saturday on the new screensavers, we'll be able to see the video of it, and he'll talk about it. But my guess is it wasn't that difficult, and but that's $1,000 almost. I mean, or whatever, right? $500. So get the higher end one, and you still may want to do that. but I like it. I really like it. I have to say, okay, I got to set it up so it launches OneNote. Love that. I think we could take a break.
Yeah.
Do you think so?
Okay.
All right.
I think
Why
we can.
Not? And then the back of the book. It's about that time. Our show today brought to you by, this is for you. This ad is for you. If you're buying a home, you're thinking about buying a home sometime in the near future or refi, I want you to know about Rocket Mortgage. Now, this is from Quicken Loans, the premier mortgage lender in the U.S. of A. They put together something for the geek in us all. And anybody who's watching this show definitely or listening is definitely the market for this because you can do the whole thing online. No going into an office hat in hand. No going through back boxes of papers to find old pay stubs. You do it all online. I mean, literally, even submit pay stubs and bank statements just with the push of a button. You can do it in any browser, on your phone, on your tablet, on your desktop, anywhere. You could even do it at the open house if you suddenly get the urge. Honey, I think we should buy this. I think we should too. Well, you go to quickenloans.com/windows. quickenloans.com/windows. And it takes a few minutes, just a minute or two, because you answer some questions, you give them the paper stuff, you send it to them, And within minutes, you will be approved. I mean, this is incredible for a loan that is tailored to you. It's not just some, you know, stock loan. It's tailored to your financial situation. Rocket Mortgage. The entire loan approval process is online. So if you're looking to refi, if you're looking to buy a house, even if you're not, make a note. Keep it by your, you know, phone or your computer. QuickenLoans.com/windows. QuickenLoans.com/windows. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. QuickenLoans.com/windows. And, of course, we thank them for making Windows Weekly possible.
So Mary Jo knows the answer to this question, but somebody asked us on Twitter whether next week will be a regular show, and then the week after that we take off and we have the best of show.
Yes.
And the answer is yes.
Yes and yes.
Yes. Next week's the 21st, so we'll be here on the 21st. The following week, the 28th, that's that whole week, that's the week I'll be back east. Best ofs. In fact, we'd love to get your best of. If you remember a moment in this year, one of this year's Windows Weeklies that you thought, whoa, like, they got to do that one. I think I want the one where you go, hold on, Eeyore.
How about the one when I hit Paul? That was a good one.
Yeah, another good one. It could all be just like a Paul abuse. It could be a Paul abuse show.
There was some pent up rage there.
Yeah. Bam.
I didn't mean to leave a welt.
Go to Twitter.
But so, by the way, next week's show, we have a special guest, and we're not going to tell anyone who it is.
Ooh. Aren't you
a surprise special for the holiday?
What could it be?
Yep. It's beginning to feel a lot like Christmas.
It is. No hints. No hints.
Whatever could it be?
It doesn't matter.
If you do have a best of memory, do go to twit.tv/best of and submit it. Now,
we did a ton of live shows this year.
I know. Well, I like that whole
crazy location.
HoloLens walking around in Holland. That was great.
San Francisco and for Build, we were live from Redmond.
Yeah, that was fun.
Back in January or February. New York City, the store. We were in Toronto.
Yeah.
We were live for Microsoft Ignite in Atlanta. Mary Jo did a live report from the Windows 10 event in October, and then we were both in Amsterdam at the end of November. I mean, that's a lot.
An
incredible.
This is literally the best year we've ever had.
Yeah,
quite.
Is that
literally.
Like suck best other quarter years. For Surface?
Suck it, other years. Yeah, it's exactly like best quarter for Surface.
Yes, exactly. Right. What are we comparing it to exactly?
Yeah.
The car crash that was 2015?
I have my owl.
There you go.
My owl is back.
And there's nothing else on the screen.
It's clean.
Yeah. Except that tiny little thing up in the corner. What's that?
Trash.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. Or as you Windows folks
like
call
it. It's 2 pixels by 2 pixels.
The recycle bin. I'll put it in the owl's eye. And, of course, I have all the fun stubs in here. Including the special, here's what Surface can do for you. Get the most out of your... Oh, but see, it's not my Surface.
I was going to say, here's the Surface you don't have.
Bye-bye. Paul Thurrott, your tip of the week.
So I'm going to do the app first, because I only have one app, but I have like 1,000 tips for some reason. So just to get it out of the way. The app Raisin Mobile app pick of the week is Groove Music. On Windows 10 for PC, tablet, and mobile, picked up support for music videos. That's cool because, you know, I keep going back and forth on Groove. Mary Jo, you still use Groove, right?
Yep, I do.
So we together represent approximately 24% of the user base. And I like it. And it works across platform. It's actually, it picked up music video support, I believe, on Xbox too, but that might have happened last week. And so, you know, they've been improving it this year a lot. And there are still complaints about it. They're still the only major music, the only music service that doesn't have a family plan, but you never know. So anyway, that's kind of a cool feature. All right, let me see if I can rattle through these tips. If you are in the market for a high-end Surface Book, meaning a Core i7 version, but not with performance base, today and tomorrow, all of them are over $400 off. It's still, you know, fairly expensive. I mean, I think the base one is of those is $16.99, but That's, I believe, the best price ever on a that kind of Surface Book, and I believe is the biggest price reduction we've seen. If you're a fan of Modern Warfare Remastered, which of course you are, just last night, Activision unleashed a new map pack with all of the remaining maps from the original game, a bunch of other new features, and an awesome holiday map, which is a restyling of a map that's already in the game but done up for the holidays. And it's really cool. Christmas trees and lights and confetti explosions and things. It's really, really nice. Had some emails last week about the Office 365 personal to home upgrade. If you already have the home subscription and you get one of those coupons with a new PC, how does that work? I can tell you now because I just did it. It still works. And so the way that works is you get an additional 9 months on your home subscription. So that's really cool. That's like getting 9 months for free. Also, if you're in the market for a game console, both the Xbox One S, every version, and one version of the PlayStation 4 Slim, I think it's the one that comes with Uncharted 4, are both $250 now through December 24th. That's $50 off, but you also get a free game, so it's like $110 off. And they have different versions of the Xbox One bundles that have other games and other things. And so if you have not bought one of these things yet, this is literally the best time ever to do so. A great $250 for these things is such a great price. And just as we were starting the show, I got two really neat tips from people on Twitter. Garth H. writes that Lost Odyssey, which is kind of a, I believe it's a Japanese RPG from the Xbox 360, I think, but I'm not really sure. It's an Xbox game, is free until the end of the month. And I did see that Microsoft made an announcement about that, so maybe I'll write that up later. And I had a tip earlier this month, I think, or in the last 30 days, where Photoshop Elements had arrived in the Windows Store. And I talked about this earlier today, where you get a 10 PC license. It's on sale now. And so instead of the normal price, which I believe is $99, it's on sale for only $69 through January 10th. I use Photoshop Elements every single day, and I think it's a fantastic tool. I had some big problems with the desktop version being $100 and you only have two installs. This one, you get 10 installs and it's only $70. That's an incredible deal. So thank you to Russ Delany for telling me about that. I think that's everything. Look at that. I did it.
Wow. See, it wasn't that long.
No. Oof.
Time for a drink.
You were motivated, I see.
Yep. Well, good to see you guys. Good night.
Time for the Enterprise Pick of the Week, Mary Jo Foley.
Yes. So normally, many Microsoft Enterprise products have support from Microsoft for 10 years. There's 5 years of mainstream support when you get new features, security updates, and non-security updates. And then there's 5 years of extended support where you get for free security updates and non-security updates. Well, Microsoft's going to try something new early next year with two products, Windows Server and SQL Server. And they're going to try doing a plan where you get 16 years of support. So you'll get the five mainstream years, the five extended years, and then six more years of what they're calling premium assurance. So premium assurance is something you can only get if you are already subscribing to Software Assurance. And for those 6 years, you're going to get any security updates or bulletins rated critical and important as part of your subscription. I think my guess is this is like a trial to see how this goes. They're making it available for two products, SQL Server 2008 and Windows Server 2008, both the regular version and the R2 version of those. Nothing else so far. And it's going to be available as of sometime in the start of the new year. So it's very interesting because right at a time when you think Microsoft's trying to encourage people to do software as a service, take the latest updates, not stay on an existing version of a product for too long, they add this 16-year plan. And they call it something they're doing to encourage people to move to the cloud. So the idea is we're going to let you have this little extra time so that you can get ready to move to the cloud. Kind of counterintuitive, I think, but there you have it. It's called Premium Assurance, and you can only get it if you have Software Assurance. So it's only for very big, very large, mid-sized to enterprise-sized customers. That's the Enterprise Pick.
And now, the code name.
Codename Pick is something that is a code name from a while ago. It was Athens. And you Microsoft historical buffs may remember this. This was the original code name for Windows 10 IoT.
Wait, what? Wasn't it also the... Oh, no, I was thinking of Athena. I was thinking about Express.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's a good one.
Mail? No, Internet Mail. Internet Mail and
God,
news.
Was that Athena? Wow, I remember that code name. Well, Windows 10 IoT Core was Athens, and we heard about that code name before we even knew what that was. It turned out that's the version of Windows 10 that was Athens. And the reason I made it the codename pick of the week this week is we already talked a little bit about it. You know, will Windows 10 IoT Core require Cortana or with a screen, or maybe that will not be the requirement? But also, Microsoft talked a lot about Windows IoT at WinHack last week, and they've got some more sessions up on Channel 9 if you want to go look at them about what's coming in Windows 10 IoT Core with the Creators Update. So Cortana is one of those features that's coming in the spring of next year to Windows 10 IoT Core. But there are a bunch of other features, especially around adding some of the Windows 10 security and manageability features that are in the base Windows 10 product to Windows 10 IoT Core. So this is interesting. Things like Device Guard, logging in with your Microsoft account, doing device management through the Azure IoT Hub. They're adding some more smart home improvements to Windows IoT Core. So they're nothing that really jumps out at you the way Cortana does, but still interesting that they're doing a lot of new additions to that version of Windows 10 with the Creators Update. So that's Athens as the codename pick.
Do you have another C-130 buzzing you?
Oh, man. It's been... You guys, sorry I jumped out in the middle of the show. No. There was like a huge protest out in front of my building with like cops and like tons of people blocking the street.
How,
I don't know.
How close are you to Trump Tower?
Is it not a Windows Weekly protest?
Yeah. It was. I think it was all right, Windows Weekly.
No more Zoe. No more Zoe.
Yeah, exactly.
Zoe, it was so loud. I'm like, what? No more what the Intel. Heck?
Well, yesterday they had, they were doing military, a plane...
Yeah, buzzing
training,
around here.
Buzzing. And it's funny because Manhattan is really a small island, but there's 8 million people or something. And so it was just like the huge story was there's a plane buzzing us. Whereas we have planes buzzing us all the time. I understand it's scary given the history. But, you know, it's just that's why all the media is centered there, right? It becomes a huge story.
Yeah, so I don't know what that protest was about. But anyway, they're gone now. And now we're just having regular police and ambulances.
Their point having been made, they've left.
They've left now.
Down the street.
I think we've had a good discussion. Let's go home.
Yep.
Speaking of down the street, your beer pick of the week is a local beer for those of us
for
in
you
the Bay
guys.
Area. Yeah,
I know.
Anchor.
Anchor Brewing in San Francisco. So every year they do a cool beer called the Christmas Ale. And... this year, I think it's always technically called our Christmas Ale or something like that. It's typically, if not always, a winter warmer, which means it's a very malty beer that has a lot of spices to it. Sometimes tastes like chocolate, nuts, not super hoppy, usually brownish or reddish in color. And this year, they've got their new one out, 2016 Anchor Christmas Ale. You can get it at a lot of different places. Even bodegas in New York carry it. It's a winter favorite. And every year they have a different tree on the label. It's a tradition. They make this every year. They make a slightly different recipe and they have a different tree on the bottle. So since it's almost Christmas, I figured we should have at least one Christmas ale.
It's going to look a lot like Christmas.
Doesn't that look good? Like you see the beer. It's all like
roasted turkey and... You know,
Like a holiday.
It's funny because those of us who live in San Francisco are just kind of used to having Anchor Steam and Grow. It was a craft beer before craft beer. It's kind of almost like Sam Adams, probably, where it's craft beer wasn't a big thing. Right. But it's just been here all along.
Yeah. They're one of the originals.
Yeah.
They're considered one of the forefathers of craft beer.
So I'm curious, is it considered good by you guys, beer aficionados?
Yeah. You know, it's not like a trendy craft beer.
No,
but
it's not.
If you, No, but if you have the opportunity to have it, especially if you never have it.
It's no Bud Lime, I think, is what she's trying to say.
I think you are correct.
It's a good thing. Since 1896.
So many levels.
It was really a local beer. And in the old days, you know, most cities had local brews, right?
Right.
And this was just our local brew. And the Christmas Anchor Christmas was always a big deal.
Yep.
You know, and you'd always run out and get it. I'm glad to hear that it's still considered a great beer. That's nice.
It's a nice holiday tradition. Yeah. You know, every year they do it, a new version that's a slightly different recipe.
Yeah. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. Yeah. Well, that concludes Windows Weekly, at least the official portion. But now I have one question for Paul.
Okay. I assume it's related to the restoration of your surface.
So, Now this is a dual drive machine, right? It has a C and a D.
There we go.
And
you're going to ask me. Can I span these?
No, I don't. No, I don't want to span them. No. I like having a separate data drive.
Okay.
I'm just wondering, how do I make my home directory live on D now? What's the easiest way to do that? I used to be you could right click on.
Yep.
Was it documents and settings or something? And then.
Yeah. So it's actually I don't know if I want
all of documents and settings. I just want my account.
Because you can do it on a right. I never do this. Let me just look at this. I can't even.
I can ask.
I won't
be able
to see the option on this system. I only have one drive.
Used to be you'd right click on the folder and you'd give it a new.
So the easier thing to do is, in other words, what is it you want on the other?
I would just like my home directory to be on the data drive, and that way. Okay. Although I could move you know what? Maybe just
because you can move the location of those folders, like you were getting to.
Yeah, one by one.
You can move the location where applications are installed.
No, that I want to keep on C, right?
Okay.
I want Windows and the applications to be on C. And I guess I can move the whole.
You can move
maybe
the
move the whole users.
There is
a users folder. Yeah. I can customize the users folder.
Just move, and have it move over.
Would that that'd probably be okay? Right.
I should know that right off the top of my head.
Well, it's changed, and this is why I asked.
Yeah, I know. You used to be able to right click, like you said,
and then you just give it a new place. Yep. I think users is what I want to move.
Yeah, you want the whole
because that's everybody. I guess it's the old documents and settings folder. It used to be called documents and settings.
EdBot recommends not doing this.
Oh, really? Why?
Yeah, starting on Windows 8.1.
No, I'm going to do it. I don't care. I could move my account folder. Let's see if I can move that. You know what? They took that in the properties. You could just say move it over here.
No, it used to be right.
They took that out. Easy. Looks like.
I think for a reason. I think this creates compatibility issues.
Oh, crap.
I think you'd be better off just moving the locations of those folders.
Just those individual folders.
Yeah.
Oh, I could do that.
There's hidden stuff in there that you're not really privy to that some things may need to write to.
Yeah. You know what? They do still have you let you right click and say location on the individual folders. That's probably why they turned it off for the other ones.
There's also an interface and settings, I think, for that kind of stuff, too. But, yeah, if you can do it right from the shell.
I can just do it right from the shell. Yeah. All right. That was my – you know, it's funny. If you don't use Windows for a couple of versions or you use it sparingly, you don't do some of this
stuff. Yeah, it's like anything else. I don't actually use dual drives. So I've
always liked having a drive for the operating system and a drive for my data, because then if I want to blast the operating system out – my data is safe. This isn't quite the same, but I guess it is good enough anyway. I'd love to just change all of Leo, my home folder, but I guess that's not an option. Yeah, you can't relocate that. Just the
I think it's because of the hidden folders that are in there. There are application things going on in there, and
can't move the contacts. Can't move. Let's see if I can move desktop. Probably not. Yeah, desktop. You can move the desktop to D. Not that I'd want to. We do Windows Weekly every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1900 UTC. If you want to join us, we'd love to have you. It's always great to have people watch the show in real time. And you can yell at me in the chat room. Tweet at Mary Jo.
Yes.
Just
tell me how to find something in Perla Chase.
Paul. Yeah. if you can't be here or in the chat room at irc.twit.tv or even in physically in the studio, because we do have, you know, room for five or six people. We had 18 people in here yesterday from a college classroom. So there's some room in here in this particular office studio.
Just email tickets at twit.tv. We'll make sure we save a comfy chair for you. But on-demand versions of everything we do available at twit.tv. In this case, twit.tv/WW for Windows Weekly. YouTube.com/Windows Weekly Show. I think that's the channel. Although if you go to YouTube.com/Twit, you'll find links to all the show pages on YouTube. By the way, we're moving forward.
Was that Mary Jo?
Yeah, that's outside again. I don't know what that was.
Reminds me of that Edgar Allan Poe novel, The Telltale Heart. They're bricking you in.
I know.
Either that or it's like that Monty Python movie and they're scaling the building.
I know. Oh, boy.
Cask of Amontillado is where they bricked him in. The Telltale Heart, it's in the floors. Yeah. Sorry. The Cask of Amontillado. I am not up on my Alan Parsons project, apparently.
How many literally references are you going to get wrong?
My favorite is the tale of Dr. Tarr and Professor Feather. But we'll save that for another evening. Join us in studio. Join us online. Download a show. Don't miss an episode. Oh, I was going to mention that we are about to embark on a bit of an experiment. We lost our Bitgravity friends and family feed for people who watch the live stream. And that's a small percentage of people who watch live. But we lost that, and we probably will delete Flowsoft because very few people use that. So right now we're on Ustream and Twitch, and we're thinking, why aren't we on YouTube Live? So we're going to experiment with that, and that I will be at youtube.com/twit in the next week or so. Maybe we'll do it during the break. But eventually, when you go to youtube.com/twit, you'll not only see every show, but you'll also be able to watch the live stream there. That's our hope. Thank you, boy and girl. Thank you all for watching, and we'll see you next week. Yes, we'll be here with a special guest. Mm-hmm. Is it Santa Claus?
Can't tell
it's
you.
Our Santa Claus.
Who? Who?
That sounds like a clue, but I don't know. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.